Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, February 11th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hey, Melody.
I believe Wendy Wilson will be joining us here in just a few minutes. First, I'm going to do the market update today, gold. Another dreary day for gold, down almost $14, $13.90 in New York spot at $12.20. You have silver down 14 at $16.87. Platinum is down 14 at $11.97. And palladium is down 3 at $770. You have the USDX today hitting right on 95, up 0.26. Crude oil down 79 at $49.23. And a little bit of pressure on the markets most of the day. I don't think it hasn't been anything significant. You have the, let me get to my, there we go. The Dow is down 7 points at 17,861. The NASDAQ up 13 at 4801, almost hitting that 5,000 mark. That's what I said. I said when the NASDAQ hits 5,000, that's when the markets will break. The S&P, 2068, basically unchanged from yesterday. 10-year yield still holding on that 1.99%, which is really kind of weird for that to be at the same level as it was yesterday with no change. So odd, odd, odd. Foreign markets were all down just slightly across the board. I don't think any of them was down a full 1%. You have the euro still trading at 1.13%. And all kinds of things are going on today. But first, we're going to discuss what Wendy Wilson has to tell us today. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Hey, good afternoon, Melody. Hello, Al.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
What are you going to teach us today, Wendy?
We're going to talk about parasites, our favorite topic, right? Yeah, well, one in four Americans has little friends, parasites. So we're going to talk about how, I know you want to wrinkle your nose and say, you know, that's disgusting, but hey, we're going to show you how to get rid of them without all that problem. So America
has... We're not talking about brothers-in-law and that sort of thing, are we?
I was thinking more along divorce.
Okay. Oh, Lordy. No, we're talking about, you know, worms.
Oh, that type of parasite.
Okay.
Okay. Y'all behave over there. Okay, so more people are discovering they have a lot of digestive ailments, and they are being caused by parasites. So roundworms, flukes, pinworms, tapeworms, and some worms are even alien-like in appearance, and doctors are sending them off to the lab to find out what kind of parasite, what species it is, so they can prescribe the right medicine. And we're used to hearing about these problems in third world countries, but there's been an increasing increase in parasite problems here in the United States, and so we're not immune to this. So it's estimated 1 in 5 people have parasites. I know it's not, as lethal as, you know, heart attacks and overdosing and things like that, but roughly 300 people die every year from having parasites and puts 4,000 people in the hospital. So it's a good idea to know how to get rid of these things if you have to in the future. So we can pick them up from food, water, soil, contact with an infected person. And a majority of these parasite infections are from either person to person or from eating infected food. So the foods that contain the highest risk are going to be undercooked fish and shellfish, undercooked meats, and raw aquatic plants like watercress, and raw vegetables that may have been contaminated with either human or animal feces. Now, some food can become contaminated with service workers not practicing good hygiene or from very unsanitary conditions in an eating establishment. So also people with weak immune systems, people with HIV, autoimmune disease, and also pregnant women are going to be at a higher health risk having complications should they contract parasites. So the symptoms, I'm sure you're probably aware of some of them. Some of the common symptoms if you have parasites are going to be diarrhea, bloating, pain, coughing, skin lesions, weight loss, restlessness, lethargic behavior, insomnia, and infections. And the early stages of parasites can even give you flu-like symptoms. And we're in the flu season, so you may not have the flu. You also can get severe headaches from having parasites, which can also damage some internal organs, including eyes and the brain. Now, I knew a pilot who had parasites in his eyes, and he had to use some strict protocols to get rid of those. You still with us?
Yeah, I'm still with you. I mean, it's very interesting and surprising. If you contract parasites, let's suppose you contract parasites today. How long do you suppose it would be before you begin to see symptoms? A matter of weeks, days, months? How long before? And I bet it varies, but generally speaking, do you have an idea of that?
Well, it depends on the species, but they can multiply pretty quickly within a matter of weeks. So you would definitely know something within a week or so that something wasn't right. So let's look at some signs that something may not be right that could indicate you have parasites and these are making you sick, because what happens is these parasites release toxins and those toxins get into organs and the blood system and make you sick. So some of the signs would be if you had constipation, of course, the diarrhea, the gas, the bloating, or symptoms that are similar to irritable bowel syndrome. Okay, maybe you have parasites. Also, if you've been traveling abroad, we've also heard about traveler's diarrhea. Well, you may have picked up parasites when you've been out of the country, so you better get checked. Now, if you suffered from food poisoning and your digestion hasn't ever been right since, it's most likely you have parasites. Also, if you suffer from insomnia or difficulty falling asleep and then you wake up several times a night, it's usually because the parasites are making the body anxious and you wake up. Now, skin lesions can also appear, or unexplained rashes, hives, even eczema and rosacea. And rosacea is also known as an adult acne, which is usually caused by eating certain types of foods, but in other cases, it could be prompted by parasites. Now, people who grind their teeth at night could also have a parasite issue, as well as if you have aching or painful muscles and joints. This could be the toxins the parasites are releasing, and they're creating this problem. Fatigue, exhaustion, feeling apathetic or depressed can actually be from parasites. If you never feel full after eating, big indicator, as well as if you have an iron deficiency and anemia, and you have anxiety or mood swings, these can all be from parasites. Because when the parasites release those toxins, Al, Melanie, it puts the body under stress and anxiety, usually causes that wakefulness during the night, and you can't get a good night's sleep, and you may grind your teeth. So when the toxins affect the neurotransmitters, they can also change your mood, and you can be anxious, and also prompts a lot of skin irritations. So I'm going to show you how you can lower your risk. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
She's ready. Okay, so when you're cooking your meats, they say it's recommended to cook them at least 150 to 165 degrees Fahrenheit, depending on the meat you're using. Microwaving your meats, cooking them through microwaves, do not guarantee that the temperatures will be consistent and accurate and sufficient to kill parasites that are in food. Also wash your hands. Also wash surfaces diligently, especially in between several courses if you're preparing food for the dinner or for someone else. Always food preparation is important. Now, there are some medical tests that you can go and get at your medical doctor. The tests for parasites, usually the stool samples or even blood samples, because sometimes parasites can get into the bloodstream. So the comprehensive tests are better than the conventional tests when detecting which parasite you have. Both tests can check for parasites and eggs, but the conventional test is limited and cannot pick up on dormant parasites. So the comprehensive test is more sensitive, and it checks for what they call parasite DNA, which means if the parasite is alive, dormant, or even dead, it's going to detect it and let you know that you've had a parasite infection. And these tests can usually detect about 17 different species of parasites. So it's real important to know what parasite it is, because the allopathic medical doctors want to prescribe the right drug to kill the parasite infection. Okay?
Is it necessary to take a drug to kill the parasites? Is there anything to be done, for example, by changing the acid or alkaline balance in your body?
Yeah, we're going to cover that. We're going to look at some natural ways, and if you don't want to do the drug route, which is very toxic for the liver, by the way, there are some other ways to deal with this. So actually, what doctors do if they can't identify a parasite and they don't know which drug to use, they usually resort to using herbs that have this broad spectrum action against parasites. And herbalists call these herbs firmifuges to expel the parasites and vermicides to destroy the worm eggs. So I tend to use several of these herbs. You know, I kind of layer them to cover most of the bases. I usually use tinctures instead of teas or capsules or pills because they're stronger and they're right in the system within 60 seconds. So they're more efficient. I'll use herbs like black walnut because the natural iodine in the black walnut parasites don't like. A lot of racehorse tracks, thoroughbred racing, the racetracks there, if the horses get parasites, they're very sensitive to them. They can die within a matter of hours or days. So what they'll do is they'll give them black walnut because it kills the parasite in the horses, and it also works well for humans as well. I also like to use garlic, Al, because of the sulfur content. The parasites don't like the sulfur either. And then you can even layer in some gentian root because that makes sure it kills the parasites in the lower bowel as well as the upper part of the digestive tract. And worms are parasites, so they can't be starved. So you have to eat some foods they don't like onions and garlic and pickles and salty fish. They don't like that because that creates more of an acid environment, like you were asking about, because parasites love an alkaline environment. So you want to abstain from a lot of carbohydrates that, you know, kind of feed them with lots of sugar, and you want to abstain from a lot of milk, which is going to be very alkaline and mucousy, which they like that too. So if you, for instance, have a tapeworm, this If you use those acidy foods and those herbs I mentioned, it's going to loosen the grip of the tapeworm and make it easier to expel it. Now, if you have hookworms from eating unclean or poorly cooked pork, You want to add oil nectar of Americana to your herbs. And I also like to use tinctures, like I said, rather than teas because of the power. And if you're going to use a tincture, you're going to use the larger doses. So you're going to use the 1 to 2 teaspoon size to destroy and even kill the worms rather than just small doses that only expel them. Okay, so if there's skin irritation in the mix or rashes, you can use a little olive oil and beeswax. And if it itches, you can add a little chickweed to that. So there are some natural ways to deal with it.
That's pretty interesting. What time of year, or is there a time of year when parasites are more prevalent? All right, am I more likely to run into parasites? You mentioned with fresh vegetables. They're not properly
right.
cleaned. Is
right.
that
You're
more likely to happen in the summertime, for example, than in the winter, or are this is not a seasonal problem? It happens year-round.
I think if you're talking about picking up parasites from waterborne sources and soil, probably the summer months, you'll pick up more of those that way. And, of course, you mentioned fresh fruits and vegetables. They're year-round now. So if you get a batch that have been irrigated with water that's from a runoff from a dairy farm, then you're going to have a problem. So I guess the risk would be higher in the warmer months, to answer your question.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some other herbs that can assist us with parasite removal. If you didn't have some of the ones I mentioned on hand, you could use wormwood, horehound. You're probably familiar with that word because they, in the World War II generation, used to give kids horehound candy. Do you remember that? And that would expel parasites. You have your grandparents saying that kid can't sit still. He looks wormy. Give him some horehound thing. Also, pomegranate, pumpkin seeds, hyssop, mullein herb, fennel, also great for reducing the gas, rue, and cayenne pepper. So you have a whole smattering of herbs that can help you get rid of those parasites really well. Because I say it all the time that if we cleanse and nourish the body, we can avoid many of these health problems. So bowel cleansing would be what I would do if you've had parasites, just to kind of sweep and clean and tone up that area. You can also use some of the herbs I've mentioned. We do have a lot of them at Apothecary Herbs in the tincture form. So you can keep on the shelf for about 10 years because that's the shelf life. So you'll be ready for parasite problems if they crop up. Also, if you're worried about the blood system, you might want to work up to the blood cleanse. That's another option for folks, especially if you've got parasites in areas of the head region, like the eyes, like I mentioned. So there's lots of things you can do to get rid of those little friends and stay healthy and not risk your liver to the toxic drugs.
There's people that have a problem with candida,
mm-hmm.
which I understand parasite. True or false?
I think chronic conditions of candida can include parasites, but usually a diet doesn't have to include meats and things that were riddled or fruits and vegetables that were contaminated with parasites. I know if you've got 400 floras and if you get the diet off or if you're using medications that promote an imbalance in those 400 floras, then candida has a foothold to overgrow. And then what happens is you don't have the enzymes available to break down proteins in the power foods like meats to convert them to amino acids. And that's why people suffer from what is called, quote, chronic fatigue syndrome. What it is the overgrowth of yeast. And if it's not taken care of, it can morph into the sister condition, fibromyalgia. So, yeah, cleanse that bowel, keep those floras in good check and not overgrow the yeast down there.
My understanding is that with the candida, if you take certain herbs, whatever, for it, you can split the cell, the candida cell. I guess it's a yeast cell. Maybe that's what it is. But when you do, it releases toxins of its own, and it can, at least initially, you can have an adverse reaction. Do you have to do this in a moderate sense? I mean, can we go in and just slam these parasites, they're all gone. We'll just nuke them.
What do
we have to kind of sneak up on them?
What you want to do is create that acidic environment. They won't like that. And also candida likes an alkaline environment, so you want to make it as unfriendly as possible. So, you know, sauerkraut, kimchi, pickled beets, these are fermented foods, and they'll help to reestablish that flora balance easier and also prevent the yeast and the parasites from, you know, multiplying as quickly. And do that bowel cleanse, because when you do a cleanse that's proper, a good one, you'll encapsulate all that nonsense and you won't reabsorb it, and you can expel it and get rid of it.
All right, Wendy, that's fascinating information, and I'm sure if people want to learn more, they can give you a call at 866-229-3663. True?
Yes, Sam, we do have a Valentine's special, 20% off orders of $70 or more through the 16th. They can just call and use coupon DAL15.
All right, Wendy, that's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com. ThePowerHerbs.com. Wendy Wilson. Thank you, Wendy. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
All right.
Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, what you got for them, Melody?
Hey, we have a little special today. I was on a program earlier today, and we ran this special, and it was a very successful special, so I'm going to carry it through. One-tenth ounce, and it's one we had before on this program, one-tenth ounce. A 1/10 ounce gold American Eagle coin and 20 silver eagles, 2015s, 1 ounce each. And this includes your shipping cost for $555, 555. And of course, you can buy one or 100 or 200 of these packages. There's no limits on this package. So a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle coin, 20 silver eagles, 1 ounce each, 2015s is the date. And for all 555, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And you can listen to these programs that are archived on a weekly, daily basis, 24/7.
Okay. What's next, Melody?
What's next?
Mm-hmm. How about inflation or inflation? How about that? We've got a little article here that's from a man named Axel Merck. He is a guru of sorts and a wealthy man, and he's, you know, he's well known as being someone who you can generally consider. You can consider his opinions, and they are generally rational and so on. And he was recently asked, you know, which is going to prevail, deflation or inflation? And he responded, he said, for me, it's a slam dunk. We're going to get inflation, all right? He believes inflation is coming. There are negative real interest rates in the developed world as far as the eye can see. Just about every country has negative real interest rates, and we have financial repression everywhere. What he means by that, if you are borrowing money in a period of inflation, and let's just suppose for the sake of argument that inflation is running 5%, okay? Then the lender has to charge interest on his loan that's greater than 5% because he knows because of inflation he's going to lose 5% of the value. He loans $100,000. When he gets it back, it'll only be worth $95,000. All right, loan $100,000, you get back $95,000 in terms of purchasing power if there's 5% inflation. All right, ballpark. So he wants more than 5% interest on the loan. So he recovers what inflation consumes, and he makes another couple percent on top of that. So if you've got 5% inflation, he's going to want 7%, 8%, even 10% interest rate, so the creditor makes some money on the loan. But during a period of deflation, all right, that's when, in my opinion, we get into these negative interest rates, which we've seen popping up at banks in Europe. It's been happening here recently. The Swiss announced going into negative interest rates, at least in some instances. And there have been a couple other countries. To me, negative interest rates are an attribute, or at least they tend to show up during periods of deflation. And here we have Axel Merck. He's saying that there are negative real interest rates all over the developed world. And this is an interesting argument to me. Because when you stop to think about it, if our interest rates right now are down, say, 2 or 3%, the inflation rate, true inflation rate, is running 5%, then we have a net negative interest rate, right? 5% inflation, 3% interest rate. The real interest for the creditors is actually negative on this. They're losing money on the deal. And I'm looking at this and saying this is an attribute of deflation. Now, Mr. Merck doesn't agree with that, as near as I can see. He seems to think that negative interest rates are a signal for inflation. And again, he says the negative real interest rate in the developed world, as far as the eye can see, there are negative real interest rates in the developed world, as far as the eye can see. Just about every country has negative real interest rates. And we have financial repression everywhere. And what he means by that is when we have negative real interest rates, the creditors are going to suffer a loss. People that are lending money are going to suffer a loss. Their actual rate of return will be less than zero, all right? Just think of the U.S. with the entitlement wave coming against us. We've got strong incentives in place to have negative real interest rates when the government has too much debt or when consumers have too much debt. The real reason we have the battle with inflation and deflation is that we are clearly facing a deflationary bust. He admits that we're facing, that's what's sitting in front of us, the possibility of a deflationary bust. However, he goes on, he says, and central banks are fighting against it. If we didn't have central banks, I'd be fully on board with deflation. But because we can't have bankruptcies, we will inflate our way around it. Well, I agree that the central banks should be inflating from the government's perspective and from the banker's perspective. I'm not saying it's morally or mathematically the right thing to do, but they should be pushing inflation. They've been pushing it ever since World War II, and particularly since the dollar went off, the dollar became completely fiat in 1971, no longer backed by gold internationally and certainly not domestically. The government's been pushing inflation, and in the last 8 months or so, we've seen evidence of deflation with the U.S. dollar index. So he's saying that ultimately inflation is going to first come up in the U.S., that inflation is going to be exported to other countries, and we're going to see a lot of inflation. That's his bet. I'm inclined to agree with Mr. Merck's ultimately qualifier. He said, ultimately, we will probably see massive inflation. But first, my opinion, we may see significant deflation because we're seeing some evidence of it now. Deflation, which seemed unimaginable a year ago, is now a common subject. So I don't know. The whole thing is confusing, and I doubt that I've helped alleviate that confusion. But, Melody, now I'm going to invite you to take a shot at alleviating the confusion. Deflation or inflation? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I truly look long term because I think that the things that we see from day to day does not tend to be a trend. And I think on a long term basis, there's inflation. And we've already exported a lot of our inflation. I mean, that's how we had the boom up in, you know, prior to 2008, we were exporting all of our inflation to other countries. So we've already been there, done that. So I think, you know, it does become a little bit of confusing because it's not so much confusion, but we can't connect all the dots. Because when you have manipulated markets and you have all these, you know, worldwide currency manipulations and so forth, it's very difficult to see what the true trend is. Ultimately, the trend is inflation. And that's why I prepare based on what the long-term trend is going to be. What my projection of what my future holds is in the future. I don't base it on what's happening today or tomorrow, or whether there's a deflation is being touted around based on, you know, and you're right, you do see these indications that can and you could read into deflation. But long term, I think it's definitely inflation. That's what I prepare for. And truly, gold. If people buy gold and silver, they're beating inflation and deflation. They're going to be protected either way. So, and that's why, when you prepare, that's what you have to focus on. What is the future? What is the best thing? You talk about paper. You talk about fiat currencies. And to me, as long as you have fiat currencies, you're going to have continued spending no accountability in the economies. And they're just going to keep doing it and doing it until it collapses. You see corporations do this. I worked for the savings and loans. And that's what they did. It was like, man, they just keep buying up all these branches. They just keep expanding, and they kept spending the money and spending. It's like, wow, you know, something's just not right because they just keep doing it and spending and spending and spending. And guess what? You know, they ended up closing their doors. And, you know, governments are the same.
But the governments are going to argue that they're not the same. And the argument behind it is that the government is always good for repaying its debts. We can wonder whether corporations and particularly individuals are going to be able to repay their debts, but the government, in theory, can always raise taxes on the people and thereby repay their debts. Now, that's a presumption that gives the government, lenders like lending to the government because it seems like you're sure to get your money back. It's a risk-free, it's a minimal risk investment if you're lending to the government. But big question, is it really a minimal risk? There's a point in time when even governments become so indebted that they can't repay their bills. There's a point in time when it really does become stupid and contrary to your own best interest to lend money to the government because it's already so indebted that it can't possibly repay. All right? Everybody presumes, oh, you can't miss lending to government. Well, there's good reason to believe maybe that's not so. That's a presumption that has to be questioned. Look at Greece. It's a little government, but look at Greece. They're not going to repay. And there'll be other nations that follow, and we can wonder whether the United States will be one of them.
How much taxes can they get from people when you have 46 million of them on food stamps?
Oh, I understand.
39 straight months, we have topped 46 million, and this is data released by the Department of Agriculture. In November 2014, the latest month reported, there was 46.271 people on food stamps. We have exceeded that 46 million since September of 2011. Now, it was down a little bit in November from October by 200,000. However, we're still up over 46 million since September 2011. And get these numbers. As of July, the national population was 318 million. The Census Bureau, that's what they estimated. So the 46.2 people on food stamps equal 14.5% of the population.
And it's not just 14.5% of the population. It's probably 14.5% of the working age population. I'm not sure whether they're calculating children in that figure or not. Do you know?
Well, they're basing it on the census, and on a census, everyone is, you know, in this particular the way they're figuring the population, they're taking the complete census. But they also break it down into the household. Based on the number of households, you're looking at 19.6% of the nation's households are on food stamps.
Yeah, I understand.
20%.
Yeah, I know.
And then when you look at the...
That they admit to.
And then you have 46.2 people on food stamps in the United States. And this article shows that the populations of Colombia, a little more than 46 million people. Kenya, 46 million. Ukraine, 44 million. So we have more people on food stamps than the population of Ukraine. And Argentina has 43 million. So... and then you can even look at Spain. Oh, Spain. You think of a bigger country? Well, they have 47 million population, and we have 46 million people on food stamps. So so where were they getting the taxes from these folks?
Well, where were they getting, and how are they providing the food stamps? If they can't get taxes out of a significant percentage of the country, they're not working, right? Where are they getting the money to pay for the food stamps?
Yeah. What cost them the, I think the total benefits for the month, I believe that would be November, the cost was close to $6
billion. All right, where'd they get the $6 billion?
Yeah, that's just for 1 month.
Yeah, where'd they get the $6 billion? And my point is, it's probably not coming out of taxes. It may be partly coming out of taxes, but at least a bunch of it is, in theory, being provided by borrowing. The government is, in theory, borrowing money in order to make good on its promise to provide food stamps. They're not being able to fully fund all of their programs by tax revenue, and therefore they're borrowing. They've devised. Now, the question is, how long can they keep on borrowing? All right. Sooner or later, again, it's like using your MasterCard to pay off your Visa, to pay off your American Express. It's an interesting formula. It seems to work for a while. It looks like you're living large. You got an adequate support source of income and revenue and whatever for individuals and even for governments, but there's a point in time where somebody says you really do have to pay on the debt, and you can't just go deeper and deeper and deeper into debt and keep financing previous debt with new debt.
I just want to say this real quick. I see on my tape here that Greece, they've agreed to keep Greece in the bailout program. They're going to have discussions that will continue through Monday. Greece says that they're in this program in principle only, and that's all they're saying right now. There's not a lot of change in the euro. The euro is still it's down a little bit, but Greece is going to stay in a bailout program.
Yeah, but that's a high-interest bailout program. They've had that available to them, and it's scheduled to shut down in the next several days, if I understand correctly. Now, somebody cuts.
Well, they're in a meeting.
But it's not their solution. It's a desperate means of shoring things up. They have the opportunity to get more money if they're willing to pay. I think it's something like 12% interest, and I might be mistaken about that. But this is not the solution to the problem. You know, it looks like...
It's not the solution, but it kept them inside the union.
Yeah, it'll keep them going for another couple of weeks. And that's what we might get out of it. But this is not resolved.
Well,
we're going to take a break. It's time to do our commercials, and we'll come back and we'll talk a little more about Greece when we return to Financial Survival. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom. Please stay tuned.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Here's an article from Reuters that deals with Greece. And the headline, Bankrupt but Free. Greeks support push against European Union austerity. Austerity, what it means is you people have to live in poverty right now. so you can pay the bills that have been imposed on your nation. You're responsible for your government's debts, and in order to collect them, we're going to have to raise taxes on you folks, and you're going to have to live in poverty. Austerity is all about paying existing debts. And when we have an artificial or an anti-austerity party, they're saying, we don't want to pay. Okay, I give the Greeks credit. I mean, the new parties that are in there with the new Prime Minister Tsipras and the Finance Minister Varoufakis, I give them credit. They stood up and they just said, look, we're broke, we're bankrupt, nothing we can do, we can't pay. And this article, again from Reuters, reports that thousands of Greeks took to the streets of Athens on Wednesday to support their new anti-austerity government, which was locked in tough negotiations with the Eurozone partners in Brussels. Satellite demonstrations were expected in Brussels, at the European Central Bank in Frankfurt, and elsewhere in Europe. Standing in front of Parliament, protesters unfurled banners reading, "Bankrupt but free." And also, stop austerity, support Greece, change Europe. Well, we'll see about changing Europe, that may be. But I'm impressed by the idea of a banner that says bankrupt but free. And we'll get to that more in a moment. For now, it appears that both the debtors, that's Greece, and the lenders, that's the European Union, other nations in the European Union, in this Greek drama, have set their heels. If anyone is playing chicken, they're giving no clue that they're getting ready to swerve off one side or the other just at the last possible moment. They may do that, but they're playing this game tough. Instead, it appears that neither side is really willing to negotiate. And we're watching a battle of ultimatums. The Greeks are saying, if you don't give us a break we want, we're going to bail out of this situation and you're going to take a terrible, you're going to pay a terrible price because we'll cancel all of our debt. And European Union is saying, we're not afraid. We don't care if you leave. We don't care. You're going to pay the whole debt, 100%. And the two of them are setting ultimatums, and we'll see if anybody bends right at the last moment. But for now, if no one's willing to negotiate, there can only be some sort of collapse. Greece will be bankrupt, and not long from now, maybe by the end of this month. Greece will probably leave the European Union. That probably happened within a month or so. Creditors will suffer a 100% haircut. They will lose all of the money they invested in Greece. But will the coming collapse, if there is a collapse, will the coming collapse be truly catastrophic? Or after 6 months of a year of trouble, will Greece be much improved? If Greece is allowed to survive, default on its debt, and going bankrupt, will other nations take a chance on doing the same? They look back and they say, look, yeah, Greece had a tough 6 months or a year, but they got through it. Maybe we should do the same thing. We owe a lot of money. Why don't we cancel our debt? On the other hand, if Greece suffers catastrophe after defaulting on its debts, will the rest of the world choose to endure austerity? Will the people be happy to live in poverty in order to pay their bills rather than to default on their debt? Personally, I think the aftermath of a debt default and national bankruptcy, Greece may do just about as well as Iceland did after it chose to default on its debts to England and Europe. And what about those banners? I'm particularly impressed by the banner bankrupt but free. It may be there's only one guy out there who says bankrupt but free. But I'm curious. Do you think the Greek people really value freedom more than economic prosperity? Is that possible? It'd certainly be inspiring if they did, and I hope, all right? I hope they do. I hope they value their freedom enough where they're saying bankrupt but free. We don't care if we're bankrupt, we're free. I think that would be an admirable
position. But Al, they're not really. They're not free because they're still all dependent on their government pensions. They're all dependent on everything that the government can give them. So until they break that tie, they might file bankruptcy, and they might not pay their debt, and they might feel free for a little bit. But their generations of the Greeks are there right back to where they started from because they're not changing the programs.
Well, they're not changing the programs. They are living under the idea that the government can provide endless pensions, for example.
So they're not
free. They're going to learn to face reality, and it may be that the reality isn't going to be fun, but will they maintain that idea? And I agree that it's unlikely that they will.
I mean, the whole reason
more interested in the money than freedom, but it would be
absolutely
if somebody sat up and said, "No, I'll take the freedom, and I don't care about bankruptcy." I'd say, "Hey, how about that?" I think that, you know, it would be admirable to me. I don't know if it would do anybody any good, but it would for
they
me.
They only want to be free from the debt.
Well, I know, but you know,
and so
you're not going to get from that debt unless you're not really free. Unless you can curb your own appetite for buying things on credit and saying, I need some free money from the government. You know, government's providing all of these pension programs and government services and benefits. Where these people think the government just conjures this stuff up out of thin air. And where they really conjure it up is out of debt. The government is borrowing money. Say, if you will vote for me, I will borrow a bunch of money from the European Central Bank and give you a free house, a free car, free food, free whatever, and you won't ever have to pay for it. That's a lie. You're going to have to pay for it. There is ultimately no free lunch. We've been able to live with the idea that we can get a free lunch out of government because the payment for your lunch has been left for your children, all right, for future generation to pay off. And we've just had the bad luck, in a sense, of being the generation who's going to get caught with the bill. And now all those free lunches, they said, wait a second, I thought we were getting a free lunch here. And said, no, somebody's got to pay for that. One way or another, somebody's going to pay for that. And it's the way of the world. And if you don't want to get caught and you don't want to leave your children with the obligation to pay for everybody's free lunch, you're going to have to learn to be responsible during the prime of your life where you sit back and say, no, thank you. I do not want a free lunch. I will make do on what I can afford to buy and purchase and consume on my own. I value my independence more than my free lunch, my opportunity for free lunch, because in the end, a free lunch, that's like the worm on a hook when you're fishing. All right, look here, a free worm. Yay! Let's have some more free worms. If you're going to take the free worm, you can bet there's a hook in it.
But the problem is that they make the people hungry. So people need that free lunch, and that's how they. And you're right. They dangle the carrot. I prefer carrot over. But they dangle the carrot, and they force these people into and allow them and think they can, and they condition people. I mean, they've been conditioning folks for a really long time, thinking that they can have everything and pay for it later. Mm-hmm. And it's just, and once you get into that mindset, it doesn't change. Until something really nasty happens.
Well, again,
and
you become dependent.
The people. Yeah, you become dependent.
You become an addict.
And until something nasty, until you die.
Yeah. You die, you get smart, one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
You face up to reality and you realize, look, I got to support myself.
But I'll guarantee you there's more addicts that die than survive.
We'll watch and see, but, we are coming to a moment, in my opinion, we're still headed for that moment when we're going to have to face some, we're going to see some banners in this country, and someone might say, they might also say, some people might also say, bankrupt but free. Will it be cause for celebration? No, it'll be difficult times. But I think maybe it's not such a bad deal. I'm wondering, can they emulate Iceland? Iceland said we're not going to pay our debt. Everybody said the world's going to come to an end and Iceland's going to go bust and everything. They had a difficult 18, 24 months, and they were then came back to a relatively strong economy. Well, the same thing happened for Greece. And if it does, will other debtor nations all sit back and say, hey, look, it worked for Iceland, it worked for Greece. Maybe we can cancel a debt too. Is it right? I'm not going to argue that it's right to cancel the debt. I'm just going to sit back and say it may be human nature. If you can't pay the debt, why keep trying? It's like, what was it? I can't remember. who the Greek character, Greek myth and mythology, trying to push that boulder up the mountainside. If you can't get that boulder to the top of the hill, maybe it's time to stop pushing. Let her roll down. Get out of the way. Let her roll down and get back to life. So, but if that happens, and if that kind of idea catches hold in the world, then people who have those paper debt instruments are going to find out they're wiped out. They're going to have a terrible time. The people that are being held responsible for paying the debt, they say, we're not going to pay. What happens to the people that are holding those pieces of paper, the paper debt instruments, the promises to pay, the U.S. bonds, the Greek bonds, the bonds on the European Central Bank? What happens to them when they find out, oops, the alleged debtors are just saying, we're not going to pay? It'll be chaotic. It'll be confusing. You know, we talked earlier in the program about the confusion as to whether we're going into inflation or deflation. Here's an article from the Associated Press, and it's entitled, Another Failed Revel Sale Typifies Atlantic City's Woes. Now, this is fascinating to me. It's nothing screams failure louder than a $2.4 billion casino that nobody wants, even at a 96% discount. And nothing typifies the fading fortunes of Atlantic City's gambling market more than Revel, which was supposed to help rejuvenate the struggling resort when it opened less than 3 years ago, but wound up being its most spectacular flop. I'm looking at a photograph of the Revel Casino. It's multi-level. Parts of it are probably 4 or 5 stories tall. Parts of it are 10 stories tall. Parts of it, the tower that I assume is the hotel, looks like it's 30, 40 stories high, maybe more than that. This is a big glass and steel structure that they paid $2.4 billion to build 3 years ago. Opened less than 3 years ago, but wound up again becoming Atlantic City's most spectacular flop. On Tuesday, the casino's owners canceled the deal to sell it for $95.4 million. They put $2.4 billion into this thing, and they're trying to sell it for $95 million, all right, which is about 4% of what they paid. And the deal fell through, and there's nobody left. There's no apparent buyer waiting in the wings. You know, we talk about, are we facing inflation? Are we facing deflation? It's confusing. Who can say for sure? But when we look at people who have $2.4 billion to invest, you'd think these people are pretty smart. You sit back and say they must know the best gurus to listen to when it comes to making investments. And they made a $2.4 billion investment less than 3 years ago that is now not even worth $95 million. They've taken a 96% loss in a matter of little over 2 years. It tells you. You look at this.
They're stupid.
Yeah.
They should listen to this program.
Hey, well, we've calculated. We're economists, and we've done our math and our calculations here, and we can invest $2.4 billion, and we can get rich doing this. Those people don't know what they're talking about.
Hey, these people needed a loss, Al.
Well, if they did, if that's all that motivated them, they got what they were looking for. So what's the point? I don't know. We're living in unstable times. It's difficult for any of us to accurately predict what's likely to happen in the near or distant future. You got to protect yourself as best you can. You recognize the problems and the dangers and the risks. From my perspective, you're going to sit back, and I harp on this on a regular basis, you get away from paper debt instruments and put your wealth into gold and hang on tight. All right? We're out of time. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival. We will see you tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye. Thank you.
work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? But still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.